What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and our man, Graham Barfield. And happy Super Bowl week, guys.
Yeah, man. It's apparently, it's kind of cold in Atlanta right now. A little icy, this whole polar vortex.
I mean, California's just like LOL right now.
Pretty much.
Although we are going to get rain again. That's just me being spoiled when it comes to weather. With the rain.
Yesterday it was like 70 degrees or whatever. I still keep in touch with our old pal Alex Gelhar, who's back in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, dude, he's got to be freezing his tookies.
They are locked in basically. He is back in law school in Wisconsin. Classes have been canceled for a few days,
wow.
And he actually sent us. He sent us a copy of the memo, the warning that they sent out. And, I mean, they're expecting temperatures to get to, like, below 40, below 50, whatever.
Holy
it was like,
cow.
Like the one of the sentences was, do not go outside under any circumstances or something like that. And we're like, well, what do you have a dog? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, I know. The dog has to go outside and pee. It probably comes out frozen. It's like the planet Hoth, man.
I have a friend who lives outside of Minneapolis, and he sent me a screenshot. It's the same temperature in Minneapolis. Or it was last night. The same temperature in Minneapolis as it was in Antarctica.
That's cold.
Oh,
negative 25.
That is cold. I guess I shouldn't be complaining about rain then. Huh?
I'm going to say in the meantime, it's, I believe, as we record this podcast, it is currently 58 degrees with an expected high of about 70.
How many people across the country listen to that and just scream F you?
Oh, I'm sure a lot. which is part of the reason I say it, actually.
At their podcast channels.
Yeah. Right. Really, I have a really good friend who lives in Syracuse, New York, and he.
That's even.
Right, it's pretty bad. I remember a couple years ago, it was like March, and he sent me a text message. It's like a photo of his front lawn, and there was still snow on the front lawn. He's like, man, it's terrible. And I'm like, yeah, I feel you. I had to put on socks in my apartment. So that was met with a whole bunch of expletives.
Yeah.
Behind the glass, our normal guy, Eddie, is off this week. He's helping out with all the Super Bowl preparations, but we are very excited to have Kent Brown sitting back in with us again. Kent, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm with you in terms of warm weather is nice. My twin brother is an elementary teacher in Pittsburgh. They're off the next 2 days because of all the bad weather.
Wait, there's two of you out? There's two of you out there?
Identical twin brother.
Oh, is he a WWE freak like you?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
What did you think of the Rumble?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. I thought Rollins and Becky would both win, so there was nothing too surprising.
Yeah,
but it was a good time. The Rumble's always fun. I think they probably could slim it down to like 4 hours instead of like seven, like they're doing.
You would
now.
Think Seth's got to take the title.
Hour?
He's got to take the title off of Brock, right?
I think so.
I would think so.
So you're telling me Royal Rumble's as long as Super Bowl pregame?
Royal Rumble is like, I mean, so they say it's like Mania and then SummerSlam, but Royal Rumble's right up there with one of the most popular. Well, pay-per-views, does that even count anywhere? Is it pay-per-view now? I mean, I guess it is because you have to pay for WWE Network. But
exactly.
Not in the traditional sense of it, sure.
And I was giving my brother a hard time yesterday because I went golfing after work today. I got, out of work, got out of work at about 2:30 and went golfing and sent him some pictures, and he was like, yeah, I'm stuck in my house. So I'm with Marcus. We're doubling down on just making people hate us.
Pretty much.
So. Well, you know who hates Los Angeles and Southern California in particular? Is the people in Massachusetts.
I was going to say Saints fans?
Well, no. I mean, because think about it, because the Red Sox. Oh, by the way, one of my worst nightmares came true this week. So I coach Matthew's baseball team.
Okay, and they are the Red Sox, aren't
son
they?
Of a And so I coach the team, and I told them, I'm like, dude, I am not wearing a Red Sox hat. I will not wear a Red Sox. I'm not wearing anything Red Sox. I won't do it.
Look,
I won't do it.
I normally wouldn't advocate this, but I will give you an out. You can go over to UCLA and get like a dark blue because
it's Bruins, right? Yeah,
the logo for their baseball cap is the same
that's true.
The Red Sox.
Yeah.
So you can go
actually
there,
creative, yeah.
Get one of those. Tell people that it's actually a UCLA hat.
And you know what? Too, like one of the guys who runs the league draw, Dave Kenny, is a good dude. I told him a few weeks ago, I was like, I'm not going to end up with the Red Sox, right? There's eight teams. You got a 1-in-8 shot. I go in,
and
we find out
eyes.
Where Matthew goes, and he looked at me, and I said, son of a, it's the Red Sox, isn't
it? You rolled snake eyes. That is funny.
That's awful.
But we got some
awful.
We got some stuff to talk about today. We will do some DFS stuff for you folks still playing, because rumor has it there is one more game to be played in the National Football League this season. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We're going to our top Super Bowl commercials, because, I mean, that's why we really watch the Super Bowl, right, is to be sold things. So we'll talk about some of the best ones that we remember. But first, let's do some news. The big news coming out of our nation's capital, the Redskins believe that Alex Smith, who suffered a horrible leg injury last season, will miss all of 2019. Now, the reports originally were that it was very bad. I mean, usually when a guy gets injured and he has surgery, you immediately hear, well, you know, successful surgery and he expects to be back by training camp or the start of preseason or what have you. We didn't hear that with Alex Smith, that it was it seemed like it was bad pretty much immediately. And now there's a strong belief that he's going to miss all of 2019. Fabs, we saw this offense really fall apart when Alex Smith went out. And look, it wasn't totally him. I mean, they had a lot of issues. They had injuries on the offensive line or what have you. But if they're scrambling at quarterback, because they're paying Alex Smith a lot of money, so they don't have a ton of cap room. They can't necessarily go out and spend big. Maybe they draft somebody, but yeah. This turns everything sideways in that offense now.
Yeah, no, it does. And, I mean, you know, the options are like Teddy Bridgewater could be an option. Like, Foles is going to be out there. Any team that needs a quarterback, Foles is going to be at the top of the wish list. Flacco, right, could be potentially an option as well. Right now, Colt McCoy is under contract until 2020. They're not going to go into the season with Colt McCoy as their quarterback. At least not as their starter, you would guess. So there's going to be some movement there. I don't know that there's a quarterback they're going to be able to get in the draft that would come right in and be able to start. So it could be the Darius Geis show there in 2019.
That's what I was just thinking. Is it's just like, are we just going to be picking Geis and that's it from this team in fantasy next year?
I know.
It might be.
Yeah, it could be.
I mean,
yeah.
The Alex Smith thing is so unfortunate, man. Like, because he had to go, like, in a bunker for, like, 3 weeks. Like,
did you see that brace that he had on at the Wizards game?
We didn't see anything
My
from
goodness.
Alex Smith until he, like, basically after he broke his leg until he went to that game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it looked bad. It apparently is bad. Mm-hmm. So certainly wish him the best in his recovery. It would be great to see him get back on the field, but it appears that it will not be next season. So, yeah, you're right. It may just be a Darius Geis, and that's sort of it, which, you know, it's unfortunate. Jordan Reed finally stayed healthy, even though he didn't really produce.
Yeah.
The wide receiver situation.
I mean,
is kind
yeah,
of
like, I mean, it's Jamison Crowder, and he's Josh Doctson. I mean, is it time to use the B word on him as a first round pick?
Maybe. I mean, you know, he's adding to the list of recent first-round wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, the first-round wide receivers have not done well, generally speaking, and yep. he may be adding to that mm-hmm. list. Staying there, sort of in the Beltway, in the DMV, if you will, heading to Baltimore, John Harbaugh says he expects a better Lamar Jackson in 2019. I mean, I know, Graham, that sort of seems like, yeah, duh. I mean, the guy's had a year to kind of play, and he'll have an offseason to sort of get better. But, you know, we definitely saw flashes from him. And I think, you know, if Lamar Jackson really does take that next step, you know, we talk about the Redskins kind of regressing because Alex Smith isn't necessarily there. I would expect the Ravens offense potentially gets a little bit better if Lamar Jackson's able to take that next step.
One of the things that Baltimore really, I think, enjoyed this year in the terms of the difference between Flacco and Lamar Jackson is just what Lamar can do under pressure.
Mm-hmm.
He was a better passer in terms of his quarterback rating under pressure this year per Pro Football Focus, but obviously the big one is his scrambling ability. So for me, I think where Lamar needs to get better is just, I mean, they have got to be able to run like one or two progressions on second and eight and be able to pick up a first down.
Right.
Like we saw it in that Chargers game. When they got knocked off their script, they failed.
Yeah.
When they can't run the ball 55-60% of the time, they fail. They have got to find a way to get Lamar a little more comfortable throwing outside the numbers, not just throwing play action over the middle. They've got to add some layers to this passing offense because they're going to get figured out really, really quickly early next year because yeah. The Chargers built the script.
And Harbaugh said that, you know, Jackson is going to throw, quote, a lot in the offseason, duh. But some of the numbers that he put up as a runner, when you also consider that he started, what, 7 games?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ridiculous. These were in my 150 fantasy facts. He averaged 17 carries a game. He averaged 80 rushing yards a game in his seven starts, projected over a full season. He rushes for 1,200 yards, has 272 rushing attempts, and scores 10 touchdowns, which just as a running back would have given 187 fantasy points. And that's standard because we're not talking about catches.
Essentially like a low-end RB1.
Ridiculous.
I mean, that's kind of what it was. I mean, he was like a low-end RB1 at quarterback.
So you've got Lamar Jackson, you've got Baker next season. Those are going to be two of your big breakout candidates, just like Patrick Mahomes was this past season in fantasy football. Who goes first, and are either one of these guys in the top 10?
I don't know that either one is in the top 10. I think Baker's closer to the top 10 probably than Lamar Jackson's going to be. Yeah, I mean, I think with what we saw from Baker Mayfield and the fact that, you know, he gets to stay in an offense that obviously he was comfortable in last year, I think he's probably, of the two, the one that gets closer to the top 10. Yeah. But I don't know.
And I think that's the strategy I'm going into drafts with. I mean, I've always gone wait on a quarterback, but now, like, I would not have any problem going into next season with Baker and Lamar Jackson as my two quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah.
No issue whatsoever.
It's wild because quarterback depth is just insane.
It's so insane. It's crazy insane. So I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Lamar Jackson goes in drafts. I mean, you know, you talk about all the things, Graham, they need to do to kind of get that passing game up to speed. I mean, certainly, you know, the knock on Lamar coming out of college was his accuracy, and I think we saw that at times this year. So if he can somehow work on that, you know, and I am not a quarterback guru. I know people say that, you know, you can't get more – either you have accuracy or you don't, that you can't improve it. I don't know. We'll see. But I think this offseason is going to be a big test for him to see if he can get a little bit more accurate throwing the football. The Eagles reportedly could be a landing spot for Kareem Hunt. I know that's the thing Jimmy Kempsky from the Philly Voice was saying, that the Eagles could find a landing – could find a spot for him in the offense. Fabs, I know you probably like me. I'm a fan of anything that reduces the number of running back committees in the National Football League and makes things easier. Mm-hmm. Kareem Hunt in Philadelphia means that committee that drove us insane all year long would probably be no more.
Yep.
And I mean, maybe I'm crazy. I feel like he could be sort of a version of what the Eagles had for so many years with LeSean McCoy, is a guy who can run it and catch it out of the backfield.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that we need to know is, how long is he going to be suspended? And you would think that the NFL will come down with that suspension at some point before free agency begins.
We also know that the NFL is...
Yeah, they don't have to do that.
right. They don't have to
do
that.
I mean, we've seen them string along people, like, you know, how long they strung along Josh Gordon a couple years ago. So, I mean, we could be waiting till week one almost.
So, I mean, you know, and the whole situation and it's... that situation, I mean... Let's be honest, it was disgusting. The video that we saw was disgusting. Right. I don't know how long the suspension is going to be. I hate talking about fantasy football when it pertains to situations like this, but that's sort of what we have to do. And I hate to say this because of the situation, but Kareem Hunt in Philadelphia is a really good fit from a fantasy perspective, a really good fit. So this is a guy who, depending on how many games he is forced to miss because of the expected ban, he could end up being one of the better draft bargains in fantasy football. I feel odd saying that because of the situation.
I understand
that. He's a very young, up-and-coming running back who was on pace to have another monster season after putting up a monster season as a rookie, and then you put him into Doug Peterson's offense as the featured back, and boy, the sky's the limit.
Yeah.
But it's an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think in a lot of ways, you know, Kareem Hunt is sort of the – I feel like these are all kind of test cases for the league. He's sort of the new one because he's, as you mentioned, he's a young guy, mm-hmm. only a couple of years into his career, obviously extremely talented.
Yep.
And, you know, we know that as soon as it is viable for teams to make a run at him, teams are going to make a run at him.
Yep.
So
I just wonder, like, how long the suspension is going to be because Zeke got 6 games for allegations.
Right.
So we have video here.
Yeah,
Is it a full season ban? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea, and that's one thing we're gonna have to wait on. But you know, for now, There's already talk. The fact that there's already talk about him landing somewhere suggests that
Chicago's already been rumored too.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy.
Well, because of the right. Yeah,
which, man, that would be.
From a fantasy perspective.
Just from a football like, that's interesting because, I mean, look, maybe Jordan Howard's days there are numbered. Obviously, we saw him sort of phased out of the offense. But, you know, Tariq Cohen is sort of Kareem Hunt light.
I think that's my thing, though, is if we're already hearing these rumors in January that Kareem Hunt is reportedly going to sign somewhere, that means
he's going to sign somewhere.
Yeah, he'll sign somewhere.
He's going to get a job. Absolutely.
Oh, there's no the difference between him and Ray Rice. Yeah. Both of their actions were disgusting. That cost Ray Rice his career in the NFL. Rice was an older back,
right?
And he hadn't sort of, you know, Kareem Hunt. He's 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
And in a year and a half in the league, I mean, he was an incredibly successful statistical player. So I get it. It's, you know, say what you will, but the NFL is...
It's the reality of the NFL.
The NFL is not going to let a talented player who's young like that go unaccounted for. He is going to get signed somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Some news out of Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown has reportedly not closed the door on returning to the Steelers.
This is like a soap opera, man. It's like Days of Our Lives in Pittsburgh right now.
This is gonna go all off season, Graham. I mean, at least until a decision is made, till he's traded, till he comes back, what have you. This is going to be the thing all off season. I mean, I guess the question is, if he comes back, do they put everything aside? Is everything, you know, good enough when they get on the field, right? Like, Ben's still throwing the ball in his direction.
I think we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago. They have to bring him back. Like, what else are you going to do? Big Ben is 37, 38. AB is going to be 31, 32 this year. They owe him $20 million. They'd have to just swallow it.
Right.
They have to find a way to sit these two down, sit them in a room, and figure it out. Because the Steelers Super Bowl window is closing, and when Big Ben retires, they'll have to be in the same position as a lot of different teams with retiring quarterbacks.
Yep.
They got to keep AB. And got to keep AB and Juju together.
Juju was on Rap Sheet's podcast.
Rap Sheet and Friends?
Rap Sheet and Friends. And he said, quote, "For me, it's more like, let's keep the guys on the team and let's win the Super Bowl. Let's stop all the bull."
What do you think Juju thought of The Masked Singer? That's my important question.
Here's the thing. I don't think Juju would have cared. I mean, because this is a guy who, you know, last offseason moved into a giant mansion to play video games all offseason. You know, so
that's nice.
He's part of the FaZe clan playing video games, and this is his offseason thing. I mean, it's more than a hobby at this point. It's like a side gig for him. So I think when you move into a mansion to play video games all offseason, I'd be like, you know, a teammate going on a a reality singing show or whatever.
And I mean, you know, Juju's net worth is going to go up quite a bit when his contract comes up.
Yeah.
He's going to be making dead presidents.
Is it? I mean, so here's the thing. How much of that is tied, though, to Antonio Brown sticking around and this team being productive? Because if Antonio Brown leaves.
That's my thing, yep.
And if Brown leaves, and I love Juju. Dude's a very good player. But if he's suddenly asked to carry this offense, if he can't do it, then that hurts. That hurts a lot.
When AB went down at the end of the season, Juju's numbers were just unreal good.
Yeah.
So, and they're going to throw it as long as Big Ben is under center.
Juju had his big breakout because Le'Veon Bell.
That also had
those targets that were going to Le'Veon Bell went to Juju Smith-Schuster this year, and he's fantastic. But I'm with you, MG. Like, that's my thing is you take Antonio Brown off the field, literally one of the greatest receivers of all time. I can't believe we even have to talk about this, but like people are acting like you take Antonio Brown off the field for the Steelers, like they're just going to be able to roll with Juju as their one, and they'll have Ryan Switzer be there. Like what? Like
Ryan Switzer.
Like, you're. I just don't know what their plan would be. You take Antonio Brown off the field. Losing Le'Veon Bell is one thing.
Right.
A running back and then replacing his production is one thing, but losing Antonio Brown is a whole other subject.
Speaking of Juju Smith-Schuster, suffered a knee contusion in the Pro Bowl. I know he says he's fine, and chances are, look, by the time we get to July, it's not going to be a big deal. But why are we still playing the Pro Bowl? I mean, like, why? I have said for years, look, let's just name a Pro Bowl team, however you want to do it. You want to do fan vote, you want to do, you know, media vote, player vote, whatever. Name your Pro Bowl team. Let's give those guys a bonus. Yep. If you want to send them to Hawaii on vacation, hey, let's do it. But why are we still playing?
Bro, they have tried everything.
And that's the thing. They keep trying.
To gain fan interest, they actually, a few seasons ago, if you remember, tried to incorporate a fantasy football draft.
Right, which was awkward.
You know, Michael Irvin was drafting, and Jerry Rice, I think it was.
It was really awkward. You had guys just kind of sitting there waiting, not getting picked. And, like it's awkward enough during the actual draft, but now these guys are, like, the all-stars, and they're, like, getting picked last.
This was like when I did an event a few years ago in New York City for the NFL, and there was a draft going on, and Rashad Jennings was actually in the room, and it was like the 10th or 11th round, and no one had drafted him.
Oh, no. Right.
So it was like, oh, okay, this is a little awkward. Then they brought him up on stage with Andrew Siciliano, and I think at some point then someone drafted him. But, yeah.
I just don't think there's a good way to do a Pro Bowl.
There's just not.
Because the players are out there not really competing. You know, you're seeing guys run downfield and kind of...
You say not really competing. They're walking.
Right.
Which they should do. I wouldn't.
Listen,
I
work for the NFL. I don't want to make it sound too bad. But it is what it is, man. Heck, you know what? Turn it into a glorified flag football game.
And here's maybe the biggest issue with
that. Actually,
Pro Bowl
could be fun, flag football.
Yeah. Although, right? You know, I don't know if you guys remember, they played like a beach.
Yes.
Beach
and,
game.
And that's that when
Robert
Edwards got hurt.
Robert Edwards
tore up his knee.
Who had a great rookie season with the Patriots.
Yeah, tore up his knee.
Just blew out his knee, never played again, and then they got rid of it. I would say that one of the problems with the Pro Bowl is, you can't play it anywhere but at the end of the season. You're not going to stop in the middle. There's no natural break in the middle of the season to play it like you have with Major League Baseball or the NHL or the NBA, where you stop in the middle of the season and you play. And so part of the reason those games draw interest is because there's still meaningful games to be played after. Like now, like pretty much all the meaningful games have been played. And I think it might have been worse when they played the Pro Bowl after the Super Bowl, because that was like really why do I care? At least now you still have one more game that sort of has some meaning, but you know, I just don't know how to do it in a way that's right. And now you got, you know, you always the risk of guys getting hurt.
At some point, you know, once gambling potentially becomes legalized, maybe you factor into a fantasy football scenario that you can throw in and couple with the Pro Bowl, where
there are already degenerates out there.
Oh, I know, but like, you know, it's like, I, you know, turn it into a big DFS. I don't know. It's hard to.
You can parlay the Pro Bowl into the Super Bowl now. It's crazy. The Pro Bowl.
Wow.
Yeah. It's wild.
That is wild.
There's some true degenerates out there, man.
Absolutely. Speaking of the Super Bowl, obviously the Rams are there. Now, the story, Brandon Cooks supposedly purposely dropped a pass from Jared Goff before Greg Zuerlein came out and kicked the game-winning field goal in overtime to beat the Saints and send the Rams to the Super Bowl. Now, had he caught the pass, according to everybody watching it in the reports, you know, he likely would have lost 3 or 4 yards, turning what would have been a 57-yard field goal into a 60 or 61-yard field goal. Mm-hmm. And so the Cooks supposedly purposely dropped this pass before the field goal was kicked. I saw this, and I thought about all the PPR folk out there who I'm sure pulled their hair out when they heard this story. Because, you know, look.
But it was smart. I mean,
I mean,
even Sean McVay said, he's like, I had a bad play call, and Cooks kind of saved me on that one.
It was one of those. It's one of those things where, you know, and you know, I'm sure we could make a long, long list of them where smart football and fantasy football just butt heads with one another, because it was Ryan
Westbrook, Maurice Jones-Drew.
I mean, Todd Gurley sliding down at you guys sliding down at the 1 yard line instead of scoring touchdowns to run clock. It's one of those things where, like, I'm sure that, you know, like I said, tactically it was the right move. Zuerlein probably would have made it from 60. I mean, the way he booted that thing through, he probably still would have made it. But it was a smart move.
That thing was nuked.
Oh, he crushed it.
He could have made that from maybe 70.
He crushed that.
I mean, it was no doubt. Like, it hit the air. I was like, that's going out.
I wonder if he...
It was just a matter of if it was straight. Yeah. That's it.
Is that where he injured himself, too? Because he's been banged up a little bit.
Yeah, his was a foot injury, I think, that he's dealing with. So, yeah.
It doesn't matter.
I saw that headline, and it made me laugh. And I thought of plenty of PPR enthusiasts who probably, like, read that story and pulled their hair out screaming that, you know, even if he loses 3 yards, it's still 0.7 points in the positive overall. So, anyway, that was funny to me. And that is pretty much everything you need to know.
that was the news.
Ah, all right. You know, clean up your remote control clutter in time for the Super Bowl with Control Center by Cavo. Plug in your streamer, sound system, cable, or satellite, even your game console, and Control Center does it all. Control Center simplifies your home theater so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use remote with voice control. Don't fumble with different remotes or run out the clock with messy search results. Just say what you want to watch, and Control Center will take you straight there. One universal voice remote controls it all, so all you need to do is say, watch any given Sunday, and Control Center by Cavo handles the rest. Be the MVP of your Super Bowl party with Control Center so you can finally get off AV duty and bring the joy back to watching TV. I've been using mine. I use it every day. It's great. I actually did watch Three Identical Strangers, which was fantastic.
Right? Wasn't it?
It was great.
So good.
It was great. And that's what I did. I clicked the little mic button. I said, watch Three Identical Strangers, and it popped up.
Do you have it set up like on Apple TV or Roku?
Roku. I've got my Xbox set up to it. I got the whole thing. So
by the way, so you know, last week how we talked about, you know, the five movies that we always watch if it's on TV. Jedi was on. I watched that. I think Rocky 1 and Rocky 4 were both on over the last week. And true to form, I had them
watched
on.
Them all.
I watched them all.
There you go. Hey, shop now just in time for Super Bowl Sunday. Get 40% off Control Center with promo code LIVE. That's $59.95, 40% off regular pricing of $99.95. Control Center is available at CAAVO.com and Best Buy. Control Center by Cavo. One remote that does it all. All right, Super Bowl Sunday is just around the corner, and so that means one last chance to play some DFS for the football folk out there. So, I mean, unless, what, there are no other college all-star games, right? That I'm sure folks probably play DFS for those too, but we're not talking about that. So, got some options here for you guys, and kind of making it a multiple, or an either or rather, and you guys can tell me which of these two guys you would rather have this week, and maybe why. So, first, James White or Sony Michel? Which way are you guys going here?
In DFS, I'm going James White. James White, like, he literally had the greatest PPR performance in the history of the Super Bowl. In the history of the Super Bowl. Because I wrote a column about the 53 fantasy facts from the history of the Super Bowl, and he has the most points scored in a single game.
Wow.
He had, what, was it 14 catches he had in that game? Mm-hmm. And when the stage is big, you know, James White typically gets the ball. Now, Sony Michel has been a DFS hero for fantasy fans during the postseason because he has been getting a lot of the work. He's been getting the goal line opportunities. He's looked very good. And in the playoff challenge, I probably would side with Sony Michel because the playoff challenge is not PPR, which hopefully that will change at some point in the future. But in DFS, I'd have to go with James White.
You feeling the same way, Graham?
I think so, too. The Rams' run defense has kind of improved. I mean, they were one of the worst in the regular season. They've become, over the last couple games, but they've been one of the better ones. They slowed down Zeke, slowed down Ingram and Kamara. I mean, the Patriots are just running the ball so, so well out of their 12 and 21 personnel packages. I don't foresee them really, truly slowing down Michel, but I'm with you. I think White's the better play because, I mean, do you really want to slam the ball into Aaron Donald and Sue like 15, 18 times where Sue is playing incredible right now? So, yeah, I think James White's the play.
Yeah, I think I would make that unanimous. And I really do lean on that point you made about the Rams' run defense. And I don't know if it's because they spent all season hearing about how bad they were or what.
I don't think Wade Phillips cared about run defense during the regular season. And in his defense, that's fair.
Right. No, it's true. Yeah. I mean, over the course of 16 games, you know, you don't really have to focus on it quite as much because teams are going to throw the ball more. But you're right. Especially with the teams they faced in the playoffs, knowing they were going to see the Cowboys and knowing, you know, what Kamara and Ingram can do on the ground, they really turned it up a notch, and they really shut those teams down.
Sue is playing so well right now.
He's playing really well.
I mean, this is the best he's ever played.
Well, and I also think part of it is that watching what the Patriots have done in the playoffs, especially against the Chiefs, they want to run the ball, they want to grind the clock, and they want to keep that offense on the sideline. I mean, that first possession against Kansas City, they took the ball for like half of the first quarter, and Mahomes is just sitting there watching. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're the Rams, that's the last thing you want to do is watch Sony Michel, you know, just eat up chunks of yards, 5, 6, 7 yards at a time, and while your offense is just sitting there not doing anything about
it. By the way, James White, 47.9 PPR points in that game against Atlanta when the Patriots made the historic comeback. Can you guys name the non-quarterback who is second in PPR points in a lone Super Bowl game? It's actually a very easy...
Marshall Faulk.
No, it's actually a very easy answer because he has almost every Super Bowl record at his position.
Jerry Rice?
Yes.
Okay.
Jerry
that was
Rice.
Be my second guess. Paul.
Jerry Rice had 42.9 against the then San Diego Chargers. That game sucked, by the way. That was an awful, was awful Super Bowl. That was the game that I believe Steve Young had 6 touchdowns, and Ricky Waters had a huge game in that Super Bowl as well.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Robert Woods or Brandon Cooks? Graham, we'll start with you. Are we looking the same way in terms of PPR, or can Brandon Cooks make up yardage and touchdowns to kind of even the gap there?
It'll be really interesting to see what the Patriots do with their defensive backs this week, because we know Belichick loves to shake it up. Mm-hmm. Robert Woods, since Cooper Kupp has gone down, has run like 70% of his routes from the slot. New England, during the regular season, at the very least, was kind of shaky in terms of their slot receivers. I think they gave up like the 7th or 8th most PPR points to slot receivers during the regular season. I'll go with Woods just because he's been so steady. I don't know what they'll do with Cooks, though. Like, it would kind of make sense for them to put Stephon Gilmore on him and play press man coverage, but they could also just do what they did to Tyreek Hill and put J.C. Jackson and play safety on top and just not let him get beat over deep.
You're not digging the revenge game narrative, huh?
Yeah. Cooks has so many now. I mean, we've got back-to-back revenge
games. Yes, yeah, that's true. Now, I'm Robert Woods has been so...
He's just money, man.
...consistent all season long. Hey, guys, where is Robert Woods drafted in 2019?
I think he's actually going to be overdrafted in 2019, to be honest with you. I mean, I think he's going to come off the board in like the 3rd or 4th round, with people forgetting that Cooper Kupp is going to come back.
That's what I'm saying, too. Like, Cooper Kupp's going to end up being the best bargain from the Rams wide receiver core in the draft.
That was my thing this last year, is Cooks went in the 4th round and Woods and Kupp were going in the 7th and 8th. And I was like, why would I draft Cooks?
Why can't I just wait?
And Woods are right there. I'll just take one of those two.
Right, no doubt.
I think it'll be flipped this year. I think Woods will go too early. Cooks actually might go a little bit too late because he was kind of quiet late in the year. Mm-hmm.
You could potentially.
I'll be all in on Kupp again.
I know that we're going to talk about zero RB, during the course of the offseason. You can almost go zero wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because then you could go out and get Kupp, Tyler Lockett, dudes like that. I mean, and with the. Imagine having three running backs with your first 3 picks. It's like the old days, Graham.
It is.
Back when I started playing fantasy football, and I legit used to go 3 running backs in the first 3.
I'm just not going to draft. I'm going to go 0 draft and then just take everybody off the waiver wire. That's going to be my strategy next year. All right, so it looks like Robert Woods gets the slight edge here. All right. Quarterbacks. Tom Brady or Jared Goff?
Fabs, I'm going Brady. I like No, I mean I get it.
So resigned.
So when I no because like when I was doing the research and Michael Florio and Matt Frederick helped me with the research for this Super Bowl column. If you don't like the Patriots and you don't like Tom Brady, don't read that column because it's all Brady. Like, he has the most fantasy points in a Super Bowl, obviously, because this is his 9th. Think about that.
Right.
9
Super Bowls.
Freaking 9 Super Bowls. Like, remember back in the day? I mean, you might not have even been born yet because you're a youngster, Graham, but like, it was like a big deal because Terry Bradshaw was in 4 and,
right.
Oh my gosh, the Steelers. 9 Super Bowls for this dude. And he's put up 20-plus fantasy points in 4 different Super Bowls. He has the most passing yards in a Super Bowl, which actually was 505 last year, breaking the record he set the previous year with 466. Brady is playing in his 9th Super Bowl. That's more games than he has played in his career on the road in the playoffs. That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Tom Brady
will have ridiculous.
Played, after Sunday, Tom Brady will have played in nearly 17% of all Super
That's
Bowls
insane.
Ever played.
It is so insane. And I mean, this should be a pretty high-scoring affair, I would think.
Yeah.
I would think.
I don't know. Graham, you going Brady or you going Goff?
Yeah, I'm going Brady. Because this game's over if the Patriots can pressure Jared Goff. I will say, I don't know if it'll be high scoring. I really don't. I think both defenses can match up with their opposing offenses. I think you can slow the Rams down right now because Gurley's not 100%. They don't have Cup. Trey Flowers in the Patriots defensive line has been like maybe low-key one of the quietest, best stories of this playoffs. They're playing incredibly well, getting a ton of pressure. I don't know. I think this is going to be a really good game. I think
it should be.
I'm going Brady over.
It's like just if you look at the last few Super Bowls, like defenses have almost gone out the window, except for the Von Miller MVP season when basically he won it for the Broncos. Peyton Manning didn't do
that much
of anything statistically.
That was not a fun Super Bowl.
But I mean, you had 41-33, 34-28, then you had 24-10. Yeah, that Super Bowl was boring. 28-24. The Seahawks put 43 on the Broncos the year before, who had only 8 points. 34-31, Ravens, Niners. You know, I just think these games tend to tend to go on the offensive side. Yeah. So, you know, looking at like a 28-24 final score.
The game total was 60, and it's dropped to like 56.5.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's dropped like 3.5 points and since it's opened.
That's a pretty big move. So, All right. Well, you mentioned, Graham, Todd Gurley not being completely healthy. I mean, he said that it was an injury in the NFC Championship game that he was just, quote, sorry. And that was why he didn't see the ball a whole lot. But that does lead to what we expect from Todd Gurley. I mean, I think most people look at this and say, if he's not himself, or at least close to what we saw during the season, that the Rams are going to struggle to win this football game. Fabs, do we expect to see the Todd Gurley that we saw earlier in the season? Especially against, not only is it about health, but also because the Patriots, we know, you know, their big thing is take away what makes an offense great, and Todd Gurley is what makes this offense great.
Yeah, I mean, Sean McVay is, you know, coach speak. Gurley's going to be a big part of the game, of course. But he did touch the ball just 5 times. I mean, think about that.
5 times.
Especially as fantasy analysts, where like basically we're praising Gurley all season long. Then he gets hurt. C.J. Anderson comes in and just does incredibly well statistically for the Rams. They really didn't miss a beat. You would think if Gurley is 100% and he's saying that this injury is not an issue right now, that he should get the ball, you know, at least 20 times in this contest. And I think CJ would be okay with that because, I mean, he knows Todd Gurley is arguably the best running back in the National Football League and a huge part of the reason why the Rams have had so much success over the last couple of seasons. So if he's out there, man, I it would be hard for me to think that Todd Gurley doesn't get, you know, at least 15 to 20 touches in this game.
I have no expectations for Todd Gurley. It would not surprise me if we saw him only get 7 carries again and struggle. It would not surprise me if we saw him get 20 carries, go for 130 yards, and have two scores.
No, wouldn't absolutely.
Me. I mean, just based on how they're treating this situation, how little we actually know,
right?
Gurley's not going to say he's not healthy.
Of course
not. Sean McVay's not going to say Todd Gurley's not healthy.
Yep.
They don't have him on the injury report. That's
and then 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, we're hearing a report that he had to have a scope.
That's always how it works. Yeah. You know, look, I think we will see a lot of him early, and I think we will know within the first, probably in the first drive, we'll get an idea of how healthy he is and how effective he's going to be. Like, I mean, early on in the NFC Championship game, I mean, he dropped a couple of passes, a couple of easy passes that he normally catches. I mean, one led to an interception, one was just a drop, I think, on third down. And you kind of had this feeling that something wasn't right with him. And so I think we'll figure out really, really early how involved Todd Gurley is going to be, and that is going to have a big key for how the Super Bowl game goes. So, should be fun. We'll all be watching together, and I'm sure we will talk about it plenty next week and, you know, whatever it means for next year, which is
you know what would make this game greater than it already should be?
Exactly.
Is if the Patriots went back and wore the old white jerseys with Pat the Patriot on the helmet from the NIT.
I mean, the Rams are wearing their throwbacks.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It would be awesome.
Although, you know, the last time the Patriots wore that in a Super Bowl, they got crushed by the Bears.
The Bears.
So I don't think they want to relive.
And actually,
that.
Yeah, that's that was the Tony Eason game where he just was awful. And then Steve Grogan came in, Steve Grogan of the big bulky neck pad, right? I remember watching that game. That was during the era where the NFC was just
dominating,
crushing the AFC.
It's like 14 in a row.
It was ridiculous. And as a Cowboys fan, I very much enjoyed some of those games, although the Redskins were successful in some of those Super Bowls and the Giants were as well. But that was a fun era if you were an NFC fan because, I mean, didn't matter who the opponent was. John Elway and the Broncos, doesn't matter, crushed.
Well,
I mean, the Bills lost four in a row during that stretch. Jim Kelly.
Yeah, that was the Bills.
Thurman Thomas. Andre Reed, didn't matter, crushed.
Could you imagine getting to four Super Bowls and not winning a single one?
The Vikings, same thing. But the Bills basically did it like in a very short period of time.
Yeah, no, that's my point.
Boom. Like, no, you're, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And do you remember, was it Super Bowl 30? Was it 30 where the Bills were actually ahead of the Cowboys at halftime?
Mm-hmm.
And I was nervous. I'm like, okay, what the hell's going on here? And then in the second half, things turned around and Emmitt Smith took over, and that was the end of that.
Yeah, 46-10 was the
and that was the game. Now, there was a lot of controversy, correct me if I'm wrong, that they gave the ball to William the Refrigerator Perry at the goal line
instead of Walter Payton.
To score instead of Walter Payton.
Walter Payton never got to score a Super Bowl touchdown.
Correct.
Because they gave it
to the fridge. Yes.
And it was one of the things that I know that Mike Ditka said years later that he sort of regretted that he could go back. If he could go back and do it again, he would have given Payton the football and let him score a touchdown.
Yep. The Super Bowl shuffle. Were you doing the Super Bowl shuffle?
I was not.
Yeah, me neither.
I was not. Although I think Adam Rank might still know the lyrics.
That was he was a Rams fan at the time.
He was a Rams fan at the time.
He was a Rams fan at the time. But I remember, I don't remember if it was that season or not. It might have been. But the Bears killed the Cowboys. It was like 44-0. And I don't remember if it might have been Otis Wilson who like crushed our quarterback. I'm not sure if it was Danny White or Steve Pillar. I'm not sure. But that was not a good time for to be a Cowboys fan. I go back that far too.
Well, all right, so let's finish out the show. We'll do a quick top five list for you guys because, you know, the big part of the Super Bowl, obviously, is the Super Bowl commercials. That's why we watch the game. You know, we want to see what's going to be funny.
And
or
lately, is it me or have they kind
they
of been disappointing?
They have not been great.
Right? They haven't really been all that great
lately. They haven't been all that
great
lately.
There's been a couple of good ones, but
so we're going to dip back into the past to some of the ones that we remember and kind of put together our little top five, unofficial top five list of our favorite all-time Super Bowl commercials. So we'll start at the far end of the table, and Graham, I see you've got your phone out, so go for it.
But wait a minute. When was the first Super Bowl that you watched?
When was it? That's a good question. What is the first Super Bowl? You can jump in on this, too. The first Super Bowl that you remember watching.
You're a youngster.
That I can remember.
You're a youngster.
Yeah, it's the 2000 Super Bowl.
God, I'm old.
Yeah.
Wow, so you started the
I'm Patriots, so old!
The beginning of the Patriots dynasty.
Rams. Actually, I can remember the Rams-Titans, too, the one year the year before that as well. Was Rams Titans 99 or was it?
Yeah, that would have been 99.
I remember that one too. Yeah. So I remember Rams Titans because Warner and Falk were like,
dude, I'm so old.
They were so good.
You guys. Well, Marcus, you're.
I will say I went down a rabbit hole because of this, Marcus. So last night I blew like an hour. Thank you for this. I will also say a lot of these commercials don't really stand up.
They don't resonate as much anymore.
So I went into it like, oh my god, one of the ones I remember that always blew up.
But you can't have anything pre-1999.
Well, I don't remember them. That's not.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly.
I remember the Budweiser "What's Up" commercial.
Right.
I remember everybody did that afterwards. Yeah. I went back and watched it. I'm like, this is just obnoxious.
It's obnoxious. It's so obnoxious.
I went into this wanting to put that on my list.
Right.
Ended up at five.
Right.
I did always enjoy the E-Trade Talking Baby. That was my number four.
Okay.
I thought that was a great marketing plan.
Okay.
The Budweiser Donkey Clydesdale. Would be my
number. Oh, that's right.
Yep,
I remember
right,
that.
Right.
Be my number.
He tried real hard and became a Clydesdale.
Be my number three. One of the recent ones I actually did enjoy, and this isn't really, I mean, it's kind of on this list, but I did really enjoy the Tide commercial last year, too. I thought that was really good with David Hopper, the guy who plays Hopper
from Stranger Things. Yes,
I cannot remember his name. But I thought that was a good one. My favorite one ever, though, is the Oreo cookies and cream commercial because that's always the great internal debate. Is
David like Harbour, by the way.
David Harbour.
Yes.
I said Hopper because of
because the character, right.
But my favorite one ever is the Oreos cookies and cream.
Okay.
All right.
Because they're in that library and they just start
entering
the library. Yeah.
What's the first Super Bowl you remember, Fabs?
It was for the 1980 season. It was the Raiders-Eagles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Raiders-Eagles, and the Raiders won that game. Jim Plunkett was the MVP, and that's when I started to get like big time into football. So the following year, and I became a Cowboys fan because they were always on television. My cousins were Cowboys fans, and you remember that was like that stretch where the Cowboys lost three consecutive NFC Championship games with Danny White, it was Danny White and Tony Dorsett for me, who were the two big guys that I loved. Although I loved Ed Tuttle Jones, like all the guys, Harvey Martin, Randy White. I mean, I loved them all, but Danny White, Tony Dorsett, I loved those two players growing up. And so remember the following year was the catch.
Yep.
Where we lost on that catch. And that was my first real heartbreak as a sports fan because I thought the Cowboys were going, and against the – I said, we're going to whip the Bengals, you know, and I'm, what, 82? I'm, you know, 8 or 9 years old. Mm. And so that was – that's as far back as I go. So I go back – I go back quite a ways. So my top five.
Okay.
Number five, 1995, the Budweiser Frogs.
Budweiser.
I just thought it was creative.
No, it was fun.
I liked it a lot. I remember that one. I remember the number four would be the 1980s four Wendy's Where's the Beef commercials with the three old ladies.
Okay.
Where's the beef? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
They've run those for so long.
Yep. But they're just so memorable.
Yeah, they are.
The third one is the one that tugs at my heartstrings the most. It was 2002 Budweiser commercial with a tribute to September 11th, and I actually get a little choked up even thinking about it because it choked me up when I saw it, mm-hmm. which is when the Clydesdales were you know, sort of marching through the city.
Right.
They marched across the bridge, and then they went down on one knee in front of the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
That was the most – that one just tugged at my heartstrings as a guy who lived in New York and is from you know, the tri-state area. Number two, Cindy Crawford.
Okay.
A Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Dude – she was it back in the day.
Still is.
I mean, yeah, she still looks great. But, I mean, 1992, Cindy Crawford wearing the Daisy Dukes and the white tank top. Oh, my goodness gracious. And the two boys watching her.
Uh-huh.
And their response was something like, you know, that new Pepsi can's beautiful.
Right.
So, Cindy Crawford, and I believe she drove up. It was in, like, a Ferrari or something like that. So, it just had everything for me. And number one, this is the most famous Super Bowl commercial of all time, and I don't know that there's an alternative number one is Mean Joe Green. Yeah. You want my Coke?
Right.
Right?
Which is weird, because I never think of it as a Super Bowl commercial.
Right, yeah. But it was. And then Mean Joe Green, you know, pounds down the Coke, much like Akbar does with water on the set, pounds the whole thing, and then Mean Joe gives him the jersey.
How much money do you think Coke has made off that ad?
So much.
Yeah. I mean, they still play it.
So much.
And like, still see it every year.
And it's been spoofed so many times in so many different ways. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Kent, what's the first Super Bowl you remember watching?
I was pretty young, but I remember the Steelers-Cowboys playing in 96 because, you know, in Pittsburgh,
it's old.
The big deal. And the Steelers, you know, were 4-0 all time in Super Bowls up until that point. They beat the Cowboys twice.
Don't remind me.
It was a big deal.
You remember? So you don't remember the catch that should have been and wasn't Jackie Smith in the end zone.
I've seen it.
Dropped that pass from Rodgers. Now, I wasn't watching football at the time, but, you know, that one.
Yeah, the bless his heart
that
call.
That one had to break the hearts of Cowboys fans.
But what annoyed me is the guy who had the big interceptions last name was Brown.
Larry Brown.
My last name is Brown. And so I'm taking crap at school and things like that as a young kid. And they're like, Brown cost the game. And I'm like, I didn't do anything about it. But I remember, like, I was dressed like I had, like, you know, I think that fall I was Neil O'Donnell for Halloween and all that stuff. And it was disappointing. So that's really my first memory watching the Super Bowl. And then really the first one I remember kind of knowing the full game and grasping everything probably was that Titans-Rams Super Bowl because it went down to the final play. Up until then, it was like all blowouts mainly. So that was really the first one I remember that was actually like exciting down to the wire where I can like remember exactly where I was sitting when that final play happened.
The other part about that 96 game is that Larry Brown ended up getting a big contract after
from the Raiders.
And never did anything.
Nope.
never did anything.
Never did anything. You know, that game, obviously, the most famous play was it. Was it Kevin Dyson at the goal line?
Yes.
And I think it was Mike Jones.
Mike Jones tackles it, which, by the way, would not have won the game. They needed that and the extra point to tie. That would have sent it to overtime.
Yes.
Yep.
So. Shout out Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, right. Yep. Jeff Fisher lived off that for a long
time.
Yeah,
I was just going to say. Yeah, he did.
He lived off that for a long time.
Yeah, not so
time.
Much anymore.
I'll tell you, the first Super Bowl that I remember was the January of 84, into the 83 season, when the Raiders beat the Redskins. Because I remember
– that was the Marcus Allen
game. Marcus Allen run was one of the first football plays that I have a memory of in that game. Just watching him go one way, turning around and going the other way. And, you know, Marcus Allen – for a long time, even to this day, might still be my favorite all-time NFL player. One, because, I mean, obviously he
Marcus.
Was awesome. But, yeah, he was honestly, he was one of the first other people in the world that I knew of named Marcus when I was a kid. So, like, you know, that just made it great. I would say one quick foot. I did meet him once in college. He was on campus at USC signing a book, doing a book signing, and I bought two copies, one for me, one for my dad, and I was, like, standing in line thinking of what can I say to this guy who's been my, you know, my football hero, and I got to the front of the line. I'm like, my name is also Mark. I'm like, oh my God.
When I worked at CBS, I met Marcus a few times, and he would always call me Sportsline. Number one, because he probably didn't remember my
name.
But he would always call me Sportsline because when I met these guys, you know, this is in the infancy of when fantasy football was, you know, we were starting to come up. I was always trying to get these guys in celebrity leagues because I wanted to start to pump up because I ran – it was called the Gridiron Guru League, and I ran it. It had – like Dan Marino was in it, Boomer Esiason was in it, and I was always trying to get guys. I was trying to get Marcus Allen. He never got involved in it, but he always used to call me Sportsline. Interesting, too, Marcus Allen, people don't realize how involved he was with that whole O.J. Simpson situation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. I think a lot of people do.
I mean, well, right, but I mean, if you ever – yeah.
They were very good friends.
Yeah.
Well, and there's also some rumors about him and Nicole Brown Simpson.
Yes.
So, yes. But that run, one of the great runs in the history of a Super Bowl, if you're young and you've never seen it, go on YouTube and watch it. It's amazing.
Just look up Marcus Allen.
It's amazing.
Kent, you said you had a stat for us.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys mentioned earlier about the NFC winning all those consecutive Super Bowls. It was 13 straight from 85 to 97. And 11 of those were by 10 points or more. So only two of those were even close. Well, it was the Niners-Bengals one. And
right,
then also
that was a great Super Bowl. And then that was so good.
And then of course, the missed kick by the Bills against the Giants.
Yeah, Norwood, yep.
So
yep.
11 of 13.
And I can remember the score still. Like it was like 46-10 was Bears, Patriots. And then the Niners won like 55-10 against the Broncos and Elway.
That Giants
the Cowboys.
The Giants-Bills one was Parsons-Belichick.
That
was 20-19.
And that was one of the close ones.
Yeah. The Cowboys, it was it 52-17, I believe?
Which
and it would have been the biggest margin of victory had Leon Lett not gotten cute at the goal line and Don Beebe knocked the ball out of his hand.
Beebe. So,
yep.
Yeah. So, that. By the way, that Niners game was also the John Candy game.
Oh, that's right. Where Joe Montana says, yeah, John Candy said, that's how cool he was.
So,
all right, big stage, Super Bowl, everything's on the line, and he sees John Candy in the stands and talks about that in the huddle real quickly.
Yeah. All right, so my five Super Bowl commercials before we get out of here. Number five, Terry Tate, office linebacker.
I remember that one.
This guy, which for a while I thought was Terry Crews, but apparently it's not. It's a different guy. I have to go back and watch it again.
He crushed guys. Maybe that was Akbar's inspiration when he did that to Matt Money Smith a few seasons ago.
Number four is the Volkswagen Darth Vader commercial.
Yeah.
The
little kid, that's right.
He's like trying to make things move, and then finally his dad like pushes the remote button
that's
and the
good.
Lights on the car
that was
flash,
good.
And the
I
kid freaks
on that
out.
One last night.
That was good.
And the kid freaks out. That was pretty good.
That was good.
Number three was the Larry Bird, Michael Jordan horse commercial for McDonald's.
McDonald's. Yep.
You know,
that was good.
Off the wall, off the floor, off the seat, nothing but net.
Yep.
Number two, just because it's iconic, was the Apple 1984, you know, woman runs in with a sledgehammer and smashes the TV. Because it was like the first big-time ad that they spent a lot of money on. Like, Ridley Scott directed it, and it only aired once. Like, all these other commercials you saw over and over again, that aired one time, and that was it. And number one is Cindy Crawford for me, just because, you know, she helped a lot of us grow up.
Do you remember she was in that movie and it was with Billy Baldwin? Okay, and I don't remember the name of it, and I'm gonna look it up right now. I believe it was a rated R movie. Let's put it that way. And that was one of those movies where anybody and everybody who had a crush on Cindy Crawford, and we all had a crush on Cindy Crawford, went out and saw that movie, Fair Game. It's called.
Oh, no, I didn't.
And the movie itself was terrible. It got a 12% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is that bad?
It was awful. but you got to see more of Cindy Crawford than you probably would.
I think 12% Rotten Tomatoes is worse than the Sherlock Holmes movie that Will Ferrell and John Reilly.
Probably. Yeah. Probably is. All right. That'll do it. We are done.
Wait a minute.
What?
Let's give Super Bowl predictions.
Oh,
we have to.
Okay,
Well, everybody,
no,
everybody,
right.
Do it. You want to go first?
Okay, Kent, you want to start us off?
Yeah, sadly, I think the Patriots are going to win. I have a feeling that it's going to be one of those games, kind of like what Graham said earlier. They get pressure on Goff. They force the Rams to kind of get out of their ways early. And then they maybe hold on at the end. So I'll say Patriots win 31-27.
Okay. Go ahead.
Same thing. You stole all my lines. I'm going to pick it 27-21 Patriots. I think the game goes under. I think it kind of gets sloppy at times, and I think they get after
it. If we all go Patriots, it's going to be the Rams. I'm going Patriots 28-24. Close game. Rams are going to be able to find success on the ground, but I do believe the Patriots are going to be able to force Jared Goff into a couple of turnovers.
I don't know if I'm making this with my head or my heart, but I'm going to go Rams here. I think the Rams.
Hey, in my heart, because of CJ, I'm rooting for the Rams.
In a close game,
at least one of us pulled it off.
In a close game, it'll be back and forth. I think that I think the Patriots get the first punch in, but I think sort of like the Rams did in the NFC Championship game, they weather the storm. And I think what we will see is Jared Goff moving the ball down the field late, getting the game winning. I don't know if it's a touchdown or a field goal, but gets the game winning score. I think. We'll answer a lot of questions about Jared Goff. I think it'll be the sort of the Sean McVay coming to taking over the throne as the new wunderkind officially in the National Football League. And I think it's maybe the changing of the guard. I don't know if this is the end of the Patriots dynasty. I have no idea, but
every year we think it is, but
But if it is, I think it's fitting that it bookends with the Rams. It starts with the Rams. It potentially ends with the Rams. So, time is a flat circle.
Yeah. And by the way, the Patriots I believe, were they a 2-touchdown underdog?
They were a huge underdog in that one.
I think it was 10 points.
It was double digits.
That was the game where, before the game-winning field goal by Vinatieri, which who's still playing in the NFL?
I know, it's ridiculous.
But I remember that drive started, the Patriots had the ball backed up, and John Madden said, they should just take a knee and play for overtime. I don't think they can move the ball. They should just take a knee, sit on it, go to overtime, and take their chances. Brady moved the ball down the field. They kicked a field goal.
Some of the kicks that Vinatieri has made during his career in the playoffs. I mean, goodness gracious, if they talk about the Raiders in the snow. Unreal. And actually, Steven Gostkowski has a shot to tie Vinatieri's record for field goals made in a Super Bowl. I believe Vinatieri has 7 career. Gostkowski has 5 right now, so he could tie or surpass
him. Another big snow kick last year. Didn't they play a game in Buffalo?
Yes.
I mean, he missed one of them.
I mean, unreal. That guy's going into the Hall of Fame.
No doubt about that.
So there we go. So we got 3 Pats. 1 Rams.
1 Rams. So we'll see.
We'll see what happens. For all intents and purposes, I hope you're right.
I think most of America.
I don't have a rooting interest except for CJ's a good friend of mine, so I hope he wins. Because that would, and you know what, that would be like, you want to talk about the capper, like on a Cinderella sort of story, if CJ, who didn't get any burn in Carolina, out signs with what the Raiders, doesn't work out there, all of a sudden he's on the street again, finally ends up with the Rams, and if he goes out and has a big game, I hope that that happens for him and he has a good game and the Rams win. I'm a Cowboys fan. I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't care, but I want to see a good game, and just for CJ's sake, I hope that the Rams win.
Definitely, I think we all want to see a good game. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Yep. So we appreciate it. As always, we are done. Appreciate you listening. Remember, tell 2 friends to tell 2 friends. Rate, review, and remember, if the Super Bowl is really the ultimate game, why do they play it again next year? Enjoy the game. We'll see you next week.